the band is back together. Welcome to the latest Kings of Anglia podcast. My name is Mark Heath. As ever, I'm here with Andy Warren.
Hello.
And Stuart Watson.
All right.
Who's particularly feisty today, listeners, so look out for that. If it's your first time listening with you are. Evidence there. If your first time listening with us today, welcome on board. Great to have you with us. You can subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from normally, and please leave us a top review, as we're about to demonstrate with, I reckon, a good hour's worth of Ipswich Town related nonsense. There's a lot to talk about. Like I say, it's been 2 weeks really since we did one of these, so there's a lot to discuss. But first of all, before we start the boring football related stuff, I listened to the last podcast, boys.
It was a good one, wasn't it?
It was all right. There wasn't enough Heath in it for me, but. You did mention, obviously, Heath and more importantly, my dog Benson being on Instagram.
Good lad. I like Benson.
I appreciate the push, but Stewie, you weren't impressed. You were saying no kids and pets on Instagram.
Not for me. Not when they have their own accounts. Why?
I agree with you on kids. Because, let's be honest, once you've seen one kid, you've seen them already, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
But pets-wise, my friend, Benson, Okay, he's got almost 5,000 followers on Instagram. He doesn't even have thumbs. How does he maintain this social media presence?
He's got 5,000 followers.
Almost 5,000 followers, yeah.
And you told me he gets Christmas cards. He gets Christmas cards and birthday cards
from around the world.
Countries such as?
Australia. Mostly from America, because there's a lot of mad dog lovers over in America. Sweden. New Zealand. Peru, we had one from before, but the globe, he's a global sensation,
global superstar.
Yeah, so I appreciate the push, but I just had to bring that up anyway.
It blows my mind.
Yeah, well, to be fair, we should also bring up that of the three of us, the only one of us not actually on Instagram is, of course, Stuart Watson, who takes a somewhat old-fashioned, some would say, approach to social media.
It's just too much social media for me. Twitter's a full-time job in itself. I don't know, just don't think I've got anything interesting enough to share.
Stewie's one of these classic people who's on Facebook, but only sort of doesn't, just to say that he doesn't use it. Just to sort of, you know, these people that kind of
use it
once a year to highlight the plight of Guatemalan seahorses or something.
Are they particularly endangered?
I assume so, I don't know.
I just don't think anyone would be that interested in my
life. Very interesting, Stu. All the listeners, most of the listeners listening now are listening probably just to hear your voice.
Incorrect. Instagram, I don't know, it's pictures, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pictures of
yes, it is.
People don't want to see pictures of my dinner and stuff. Isn't that what people share on Instagram?
You don't have to just put pictures of your dinner on Instagram.
That's what Benson shares.
Oh, here I am checking in to go on holiday. No.
Not for Stewie. But anyway, you can follow me and Andy on Instagram, and Benson as well, if you can find him. That'd be welcome. A few more followers. Other stuff to discuss before we start the nonsense of the boring, mundane football stuff. Andrew Warren, you were on holiday last week.
I've had five of the last weeks off work.
Five of the last eight.
Yeah, it's been really nice, but this is it now.
This is me.
I'm strapped in football season.
We are go.
Yeah.
We are ready for
no more days off until.
You not being here last week meant that we couldn't do a podcast because you're the man with all the technology.
Well, the microphone was on my desk, in fairness.
Well, I know, but we don't know how to use it. Me and Stu can barely turn our computers on, so we need you involved.
Yeah. Well, I'm a novice. I'm a novice too, but we're getting by, aren't we?
We are getting by. But one of the things I want to discuss before, we get to the football eventually, listeners, it emerged last week. You went to Southold, didn't you?
I went to Southold on Monday, yeah.
And adding to the I've never seen Back to the Future shock, you revealed to me that you had your first beer of the whole year.
Yeah, of the year.
The whole year?
Like, I've had a beer in life before.
Yeah.
But this year...
You've got to the end of June without having a beer.
Yeah, I don't really drink beer anymore.
It staggers
or
me.
Or alcohol, really.
Absolutely staggers me. There's nothing wrong with that, but...
That shocks me, sure. But what shocks me more is another claim that Andy made the other day, is that he said you've had, what, 3 cups of tea in your entire life?
Yep.
Three cups of tea.
We're talking tea, like proper. I've had fruit teas and stuff, but actual...
Hibiscus tea, we know you're a fan.
Yeah, love hibiscus tea. Yeah, actual tea, I've had probably three cups in my life.
Don't like it?
Yeah, I had one, and I had one out of choice, and didn't like that.
Age what?
20?
How can you get to age 20 with not having a cup of tea?
You just didn't fancy it. Didn't have tea at home. You don't drink hot drinks, do you?
Not really. I have a bother
and
again.
You tried at age 20, not for me.
Wasn't for me. And then I had my next one, probably age 28, because somebody brought me one, Barry Kent, the who accompanies us on all of our nice trips around the country watching Ipswich, brought me a cup of tea on a freezing cold night at Elland Road.
Yeah.
And I drank it because A, I was cold, and B, rude not to.
And you still
didn't like it.
8 years on, still didn't change.
Still didn't
your mind.
Like it. And then Barry brought me another one last season at some point.
And it's still not going on.
Nope.
You're a Bovril man, aren't you?
Yep.
Like a Bovril. It's got to be cold for a Bovril. I can't drink Bovril in this weather.
No.
Definitely not.
No, absolutely not.
It's got me thinking, Stu, is there anything of a pop culture kind of never seen Back to the Future, never had a beer, never had a cup of tea? What gaps are in your pop culture kind of?
I don't know.
What have you never done that a lot of people would think would be unusual? Have you seen, for example, you've seen Star Wars?
Yeah, I've seen Star Wars, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We did. I think after our Star Wars chat the other day, we looked up like the highest grossing films of all time, and there was a lot in there that I haven't seen. But off the top of my head, I don't know. We'd chuck some names at me, by all means, or maybe
just trying,
the
I'm just trying to think of like, things of our age that most people would have done. I mean, going back to Andy's beer thing, if I can make it through a week without having a beer, I'm impressed. So to get all the way into the end of June, pretty much.
It was lovely though. What a way to have your first beer in the sun, Southwold. Adnams.
Adnams.
Yeah. What are you gonna do?
We need a sponsor, don't we, for the podcast?
Yeah.
Say Adnams.
Hit us up, Adnams. Really nice beer. One thing you've never done, famously, you've never had the hiccups.
Fact.
Which is
I've never
which
had
is
the
nonsense.
No, it's not.
That is nonsense.
I think hiccups are mostly for attention seekers.
You're telling me you've never had the
I've
hiccups.
Never had the hiccups. I've done that thing. Where you know, you drink like a fizzy drink too quick and you get that bit. But it's never progressed from there.
That's a gag.
Gag, yeah. Okay. It's the start of hiccups, I understand, but I've never actually had the full-blown hiccups.
Whenever I get the hiccups, I get scared that I'm going to be one of those people that never stop. But you know the documentaries where they've been hiccuping for 10 years. So nervous.
Generally speaking, the people I've known who've had hiccups are invariably the ones that then make a massive drama out of it and like make them as loud as possible.
But everyone's had the hiccups.
Honestly, I've never had the hiccups. I'm not sure they're a thing. I think they're like a...
You think it's like a global conspiracy against you,
it's just
where everyone does it.
I think
just
basically it's just for attention seekers, as I said. So no hiccups here.
A bit like the Truman Show, where everyone's sort of actors and we're all doing the hiccups just to kind of fool you. That's the most egocentric thing you've ever said.
Absolutely,
yeah.
That's my theory. Let us know, listeners, what have you never done in terms of things that you probably should have done? Let us know. Hit us on Twitter. Andy Warren, Mark Heath, Stuart Watson, we're all on Twitter. Welcome you getting involved and interacting with us on there. Now then, I suppose somewhat reluctantly, after this fire start to the podcast, we've got to talk about football.
Football's
coming home, potentially. We'll get to that later. But let's start off, first of all, with the sexy stuff. Transfers. Signings, rumours, gossip. And obviously the big breaking news overnight is that LeBron James has signed for Lele Lakers.
Yeah, big.
Andy.
Yeah,
so
that is that shakes.
We didn't see
the
that coming, did we? Showtime's coming back to
the
Bay Area.
No one cares.
I suppose we better talk about town. Anyway, so let's start, first of all, with definites. What we know is definitely happened. So we've had some signings, we've had some departures. Let's discuss that. We've had, first of all, let's talk about, I guess, the most interesting thing that's happened so far is Adam Webster going, which I certainly didn't see coming. Went for, what was it, 3.5 million initial to Bristol City? Potentially rising to 8.
That's what we've been told, yeah, that's what I understand. So, no, didn't see that coming. That was left field. I would have thought, certainly for our first few meetings with Paul Hurst, he seemed like a man that was ready to come in and shake things up and put his own stamp on things. He certainly did that at Shrewsbury and moving on some experienced players pretty quickly, but I would have thought, looking from the outside in, that Adam Webster would have been right up his street in terms of he wants a side that is going to be comfortable on the ball and retains possession. But I think two factors went into this. Ultimately, he wanted to go. I think he was quite keen on going to Bristol City. I'm sure they probably have given him some extra wages. He's a bit nearer to the South Coast where he's from. And I think from an Ipswich point of view, his injury record over the last couple of years have really played its part. You know, he's certainly took to Championship football like a duck to water, didn't he, after moving up from League Two. John Stones comparisons, Premier League player in waiting, but he's had ankle problems, Achilles problems, so Ipswich have taken the money and Hurst will get it to reinvest in players that he wants.
And what do we think, Andy? Good business?
I think it's good business.
Injury prone
centre
back, as good as he is.
I think it's a good deal. The injuries, I think it's 46 games he was restricted to over 2 years. I'll be honest, I I've only seen Adam Webster play for his second season at Ipswich, and I wasn't convinced. He's obviously a very good player. I'm not saying he's not a very good football player, but I wasn't convinced. He's quite this ball-hawking, playing centre-back that we were told that he was. Granted, I didn't see his first season at Ipswich.
His first 6 months were the best. You know, and he was bringing the ball out, marauding centre-back, playing some great passes. I think probably, maybe my opinion of him has been based on that, and probably you coming in with fresh eyes and only seeing last season.
I feel the same about David McGoldrick, though. I think I was elsewhere during his first season, and I've kind of dipped in and out for the other four of his time at Ipswich. I didn't see his best. And from with McGoldrick, his last four seasons for me, it makes it right that they've let him go. Same with Webster. The fee's okay, but the caveat is it's got to go to Hurst, and we've got to see that it goes to Hurst. That's what makes this a good deal. If he can get that money,
McGoldrick's a great example here, because people saying, why have they let Webster go? Have Ipswich cashed in on their biggest assets at their prime valuation enough in recent years? McGoldrick, 7-8 million on the table from Leicester a few years ago. Now, hindsight, you look back and think, you know, he's gone for nothing now. What's he done in that time? No one had a crystal ball. No one knew the injuries that were coming. But I guess the name of the game for Ipswich, if they haven't got the millions and millions of pounds from the owner being pumped in, is that you need to sell players for a lot of money, and like they did with Kieran Dyer many years ago, you sell one for good money and you buy three or four more, and that's how you progress. So Andy's right, that money now has to be reinvested, and any further money that comes in has to be reinvested and not just swallowed up in transfer fees, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a bit more. I think it needs to go back into transfer fees in order for Ipswich Town to compete.
Well, let's talk about what they've done so far in terms of bringing people in. Obviously, they've signed Trevo Chalobah from Chelsea on loan for season. Very highly rated young utility, kind of, you can play in defence and midfield. And they've also signed Jordan Roberts, who I'm calling Flair Jordan from this point on.
I like it.
See what I've done there?
Sue, do you know what that reference is?
Yes, I do. And Mark, I think, used this one with Jordan Graham.
I did. It didn't really work, did it? I also used Golden Graham. And Flash Jordan.
You love a nickname.
I love a nickname. So I'm going with Flair Jordan for Jordan Roberts. Have you seen that goal, by the way?
I'm all in on that.
Have you seen the goal that he scored for Inverness?
Yes.
Have you seen that? Absolutely. What, you put it online. You
very good.
Yeah, it also ended up on Ipswich Town's social media. And there's one member of staff at Ipswich Town very close to Inverness.
Is there?
And I wonder why that ended up on there, Mr. Grant Pringle.
I see.
Big Inverness Cali fan.
So, in terms of the incomings,
good
Chalobah.
Kilt man as well.
Chalobah and Roberts. Thoughts? Fairly underwhelming.
Roberts is a punt, no doubt about it. He's come from League Two. He's very much Ipswich. Mick McCarthy wanted wingers. You know, he had wingers at Wolves. He tried to get wingers in at Ipswich, but the ones he got, aside from the Premier League star quality with Fraser and Lawrence and Selina, the more of the gambles just didn't work. We mentioned Jordan Graham there, but you had Dylan Connolly from Ireland. Alex Henshaw came in from Manchester City.
Tommy Orr from
Australia. So
he wasn't awesome, was he?
Those kind of gambles, punts.
Yeah.
I'm just moving on from the nickname chat now, Mark. Didn't work, did they? So and Jordan Roberts is of the same ilk, isn't he? He's done pretty well in League Two. I think he's had a few injury problems in recent years. The highlights reel looks good.
It's his first touch, though. That first touch is positive. You can tell from the highlights that his first touch is to do something positive with the ball, whereas I think a lot of players that have played wide for Ipswich, that isn't their instinct, because that's not where they belong, that's not where they are.
And maybe it wasn't their instinct, maybe it was the instructions that were given to them, and that's maybe something that we'll find out now under a new era. That was one of the criticisms, maybe fairly or unfairly levelled at Mick, was that he was putting the handbrakes on players too much, and a bit of cautiousness was drummed into them. The example I always use is Ryan Fraser went back to Bournemouth after his loan spell at Ipswich, and he tells a story in an interview where I think Bournemouth were 1-1 in a Premier League game, 90th minute, and he turned back and played a safe pass inside, and Eddie Howe pulled him to one side afterwards and said, why did you do that? And he said, well, I didn't want to risk us losing the game. And Eddie Howe's instruction to him was, well, what about us trying to win the game? And you think, well, maybe the over habits he picked up at Ipswich. So we'll see. Maybe a few more players might play with a little bit more expression going forward.
He can cross a ball as well. This is all from these highlight videos.
Invariably, he's going to look good at highlights, but certainly he does look very aggressive and front foot, doesn't he?
Yeah, he drives his crosses into the box as well, which we'll get on to Joe Garner in a little bit. Yeah. But if he's the kind of player that you'd think, if those crosses could find him, would benefit from them.
Dare I say, though, quite a Mick McCarthy style signing, Jordan Roberts.
Well, I think a lot of this, all this talk of a new era, there is going to be a lot of similarities with Mick in terms of the standards that he expects of the player, the type of market that he's shopping in. As you say, it's the sort of signing that you could easily have seen under Mick McCarthy. To me, the biggest difference will be the way they play, whether we're going to see a little bit more. And it's not going to be, by the way, suddenly tippy-tappy, little triangles, easy on the eye football. But that's not to say it won't be more entertaining. And I think that you can be direct and you can be... you can play that way, but in an entertaining manner. And for me, Ipswich weren't front foot enough. There was too much respect paid to the opposition at times. And what I really like about what Paul Hurst is saying is how his teams are going to give it a go and go down fighting at times and be on the front foot. And that's what I think Ipswich fans are most excited about.
The team that I think about when I think about what Paul Hurst is saying here, don't pull me up on the quality gap here, but the Arsenal team of 97 to 99 stretch, which they didn't play beautiful football. They won the ball back in midfield and broke quickly and were positive when they got the ball. They played counter-attacking football, won the league.
Yeah.
That's what I think of when I think Paul Hurst. Solid team, set up really solidly, but just look to do something with
press,
it when they
press,
get
press,
it.
Press, press, attack.
Yeah,
attack.
They won't have Thierry Henry and they won't have Patrick Vieira and Mark Overmars.
He's praised Liverpool a lot last year, didn't he? I think I saw some quotes from last season where he was waxing lyrical about the way Liverpool stopped Manchester City playing in a game. And he said that when you come up against better quality teams, that sometimes the best form of defence is attack and press them high and disrupt them what they're doing, instead of giving them too much respect. So I think high press and high energy and ultra fitness are all going to be elements of what we see from this Ipswich team.
What do we know then about Chalabar?
Ask you how we're saying his first name?
Trevor. It's spelled Trevo, isn't it?
Trevor with an H.
Yeah.
But
Trevor.
Let's call him Trev. There aren't enough Trevs.
Big Trev. His nickname going forward, Big Trev. So what do we know about him, apart from the fact he's got a sensational haircut and he's highly rated?
He's got a sensational haircut. There's
big potential there, isn't there? He's an England under-19 international.
It's a bit of a coup, isn't it? Getting in there, quite a lot of people interested.
By all accounts, there were other teams in for him. You wonder whether him being a teammate, international teammate of Andre Dizel, they were both in the team that won the European Championships last year, albeit both of them I think missed out on the final through injury in the end, but obviously you'll have known Flynn Downes and Tristan Nydam through that setup as well, so that may have played its part in Ipswich getting him. Younger brother of Nathaniel, who's at Watford, formerly of Chelsea. He'll have looked at his brother's career progression, also at Chelsea, who got farmed out on loan year after year to Championship clubs. There's pedigree there, there's potential there. I mean, he trained with the full England senior team prior to the World Cup at George's Park. Southgate got involved with the seniors before then, so obviously highly rated. But we'll see how he's never played senior football, he's never played a proper season of men's football, so we'll see how he adapts.
Do you think Hurst is seen as a centre-back? Obviously, Webster's gone, and he's really him and Chambers as the only...
18's very young.
And he's not like a Josh Emmanuel kind of 18-year-old, as you know, like Emmanuel's built like a proverbial tank. Chalabar's tall, but he's quite slight still, isn't he? Can you imagine for a centre back, physicality of it in the Championship?
To play in a back two, in a central defensive two as an 18-year-old is a big ask. I don't know where they see him playing, but
they're well stocked in central midfield, aren't they? When everyone's fit, if everyone's fit, and that's the big if. Obviously, Hughes and Bishop are still not training. Hurst has said they might have to treat who are the others that have
Andre.
Been out? Andre and a couple of the others that have been out and just returned with kid gloves a little bit. Adeyemi. So when everyone's fit, central midfield looks quite congested, but he may be needed there in the short term and maybe eventually they'll bed him in. And he's right, to stick an 18-year-old straight in at centre back into the hurly-burly of the Championship will be a big ask. Maybe if he plays a back three, that might be a way of bedding him in. You've got a couple more experienced players either side of him, and that allows him to be the ball-playing centre-back. But
we'll see. I like him. Big Trev, welcome to the club.
You like the hair, don't we?
I love the hair. I think he's gonna be good. Anyway, we'll talk about hair later. Now let's go on to the kind of more sensational stuff, the rumours, the gossip. Stu, I know you're a big fan of transfer rumours. Maybe best to move away from that.
Transfer rumours. Well, yeah, we've been White having Horn, a big debate about White how Horn we report tomorrow. Them. But people love rumours, don't they? And yeah. we have a duty to let people know what's being reported out there. So
we've got, let me say, Waghorn to Borough and Garner to Bolton are the big kind of rumours in terms of leaving town. And there's also town linked to the Forest winger, isn't there? Mackay, is it?
Mackay. Yeah.
So let's take those in order. Waghorn to Borough. Anything, what are we thinking?
Well, I'm told there is interest, genuine interest from Borough in him. I think Forest as well were having a look. We might have a bit of a domino effect going on, depending on what other transfers happen elsewhere.
Is it Patrick Bamford, the one?
Bamford, yeah.
To Forest.
So if he goes, then Borough might be looking for somebody else. No. It's no surprise that people are interested in Waghorn. You know, he scored 16 goals and 11 assists last year in the Championship. But
I think I'm right in saying that he was involved in the most goals in the league.
Yeah,
wasn't
it? Yeah. If you combine those two figures together, no one's involved more. So
and he barely played as a centre forward.
Exactly.
Either.
Wide in a number 10 role most of the time.
You can't sell him, can you? Unless it's a ridiculous like 15 million.
Well, that's the going rate for those kind of players now. The thing with Waghorn though is that he's done it. This is 1 year. He's done it. The other guys in that kind of range have done it 3 or 4 years, but that's the going rate. That's what you
Bobby
pay for.
Bobby Reid's just gone from Bristol City to Cardiff, hasn't he? He was involved in a similar number of goals, assists last year for Bristol City, and I think 10 million they're saying for him. He's 25, so age comes into a little bit. So you're probably talking in that ballpark, I think, for Waghorn. But I think he's settled here. We did a big sort of magazine interview with him recently, and he's moved all his family down. I think his parents have moved down from the northeast, and you know his wife is doing work bits and pieces with the Ipswich tennis and all the rest of it. So I don't think it's a little bit different to the Webster situation where he wanted to move. I think Waghorn's quite happy. Mm. I think Marcus Evans knows that you know there would be an outcry if he was to sell Waghorn. So I can't see that one happening.
And I don't think that's just a football thing either. I think he's. Thing I like about Waghorn in a world where footballers seem to come and go is that he's been here a year, but he seems to have really taken to Ipswich. He's integrated himself both with fans in the community. He's done things at schools, like you say. His wife is working with the Baltacha Foundation, doing some stuff, isn't she? And he seems to have really kind of taken on his role as a role model seriously. And that's I know his best value is as a goal scorer, but in terms of that side of things, I think he brings a lot of value to Ipswich as well. He's the kind of player that people here like.
Yeah,
it's what they've been used to and haven't had so much over the years.
I mean, I know Hurst obviously come in, shake things up a little bit by getting rid of Webster, potentially one of their best players, but I mean if you've got any ambition at all, you've got to surely keep hold of players like Waghorn, unless, as I say, you get a ridiculous offer, a huge offer that enables you to go out and get 3 or 4 other players.
Playing devil's advocate, the only way I could see it happening, and I don't think he'll want to, there's one thing coming in and putting your stamp on things, but it's another thing coming up and completely
just blowing up the team,
tearing up everything. And everything wasn't broken last season. They finished 12th with a lot of injuries, so for all of the discontent and apathy and all the rest of it, he's not coming. It's a little bit different to Shrewsbury, where you're coming in and trying to rescue a team that's in dire straits. So I don't think he'll want to completely rip everything up, but what formation is he going to play, and where does Waghorn fit into that? He played 4-3-3 with Shrewsbury last year, and it was all sort of a target man in Colton Morris, a physical front man who led the line, and then it was John Nolan, who was more of an attacking midfielder, kind of supporting him. So rather, it was an attacking midfielder rather than a deep lying forward. So if he wants to replicate that formula, and we don't know if he does, where does Waghorn fit in? Are we getting back to the situation where we're crowbarring him in as one of the wide players? He seems dead set on getting proper traditional wingers here, so
you've got to build your team around the player like Waghorn, haven't you? Surely you can't just be one of these guys you're just trying to slot in.
I think what Stu's saying though is if he's got this formation in mind, and he doesn't fit either of the two roles where he'd be best. perhaps. He's not the physical striker.
And that was the issue, I think, with a lot of people with Ipswich last year, is that we had too many players that were playing, being crowbarred into the team, too many round pegs in square holes. Waghorn was playing wide quite a lot of the time. Do you get the best out of Joe Garner as a proper front man? I mean, we've discussed Joe Garner. We know he's physical, we know he's a pest, we know he's decent in the air, but is he best as a lone striker leading the line? You know, we saw Brett Pittman trying to play that role for quite a long time, and I felt sorry for him because that is not his game. He did it willfully and he did it effectively at times, but it wasn't getting the best out of him. And I think Joe Garner would perhaps be more effective with a strike partner. His best football came at Preston with Beckford up front alongside him. So I think Hurst is going to not look at reputations. I think he's going to look at where is their skills best suited to certain positions in the pitch, and if that doesn't fit in, then he'll be prepared to make big decisions.
This is why I'm really, really looking forward to pre-season, because it was a bit mature, wasn't it, under Mick doing pre-season. He said as much himself, but this should be really interesting because there's so many questions.
Yeah,
and every game will give us, it's like, you know, in catchphrase when you're unveiling the little bits of the super catchphrase, which I'm excellent at, by the way.
That would be my choice of the show.
Let's do it. Let's get that sorted. It's like that. So we're going to unveil these little squares and we'll find out what Mr. Chips is doing behind
that
the screen.
Analogy, yeah.
You like?
Love it.
Good. So what are we saying then? Sell Waghorn, yes or no, both of you?
No.
Correct answer. Now then, next rumour. Garner. Garn's dog. Newly
That's
shaven.
That's a terrible nickname.
Yeah, it's not good, is it? Newly shaven, headed Joey Garner.
Yep.
Linked to Bolton, 500k.
Yeah.
I'm saying, get rid of him. Ooh. Fractured skull last year. He's got more injuries than a 65-year-old man. I love the way he plays. I love the fact he wanted to play with a fractured skull and only was told he couldn't because he basically couldn't stand up.
Yeah. That revs your engine, doesn't it?
Yeah, I love that.
He played most of the season, I must add, with a pretty messed up shoulder, I think. He, going right back to pre-season, he's out of shirt. So,
but if you can get 500 grand... How old is he? 30 plus, is he, Joey Garner?
I think he's 30.
He's 30 and they paid $750 for him last summer, and he's had a pretty decent debut campaign off the back of that with 10 goals. It goes back to what we've just been discussing. Where does he fit in to what Paul Hurst wants? And again, going back to a previous theme, I think a lot of it always comes down to whether the player wants to stay or go. And from what we understand, I think he wouldn't be adverse to moving back up towards his roots.
Is that where he's from?
He's from Blackburn.
Okay.
He's got a young family. So, you know, we forget that these are human beings with young families, and we've all got family situations with partners that, you know, want to be in different places and stuff like that. So I'm sure that will come into it. So Waghorn I can't see happening. Garner, for that reason, maybe have a chance.
Garner's an interesting one, I think, because he's either your kind of player or he's really not your kind of player. I don't think there's any grey areas with Joe Garner. You either, if as a football manager, you're either going to absolutely love him, which Mick did clearly, or you're not, which is, I think, what the Rangers manager came in and, was it Kashina, came in last summer and just wasn't for him, and he ended up leaving. And I think we're going to find out what Paul Hurst thinks of Joe Garner, and that's another one of those squares to be unveiled.
Sell Garner, yes or no? Yes or no?
If the we're just saying yes or no. If the money's, if they can get their money back on him, and Hurst can get someone that he wants, then if he wants to go, then reluctantly yes.
Got there in the end, Andy.
If he wants to go, let him go. But if he doesn't, don't sell him. Play him with a strike partner.
And he's got the haircut now as well. And then just.
That brings, you're going to say Mackay next, aren't you?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Andy, that was a nice little segue there, because Andy said, is it Kashina at Rangers? He came in and sold everybody, didn't he? Waghorn, Garner, and the man we're about to talk to, Barry Mackay, was another casualty of Kashina, who went on to Forest, who has now been linked to Ipswich.
So what do we know about Mackay? Reports that Town have made a bid for him, or at least made a fairly strong inquiry about
him?
Firm
inquiry is what our... our friends at Sky Sports say, and I'm sure they tend to be pretty well, I'm sure that's probably come from an agent. That tends to be where those sort of things come out from. So I think he went into Rangers. I think they paid half a mil for him last summer. First half of the season absolutely ripped it up by all accounts. Was reunited with Warburton at Forest. Skillful little boxer tricks winger on the left hand side, runs at his marker, so ticks a lot of the boxes that I think Hurst is looking for in a winger. And then Karanka comes in, and as we've been saying, one player is a manager loves and is not a cup, you know, not their cup of tea under another manager. He fell completely out of favour under Karanka. Forest have gone out and chucking millions around, getting in Portuguese players, doing the Wolves route. So it looks like the stars could align for that one, I think.
Mm. And shall we just talk before we move on very quickly just about the whole transfer rumours thing, debate? Because part of what I see this podcast as being is allowing us to kind of bring the listeners closer into how things work in our world, if you like. And obviously, in the football world now, is fueled by rumours and gossip and he said, she said, all that sort of stuff, which makes it very, very difficult to see the wood for the trees, doesn't it, in terms of you doing your job. Obviously, Sky Sports have got a permanent transfer blog going in which there's loads of rumours and stuff. And it makes it difficult in a way for us to report them, because obviously we can't ignore stuff that's coming from elsewhere that we don't necessarily have been told about. So the way we approach it, when you see on our website, you'll see an Ipswich Town transfer rumours badge and then a report. That's basically to indicate that it's not something that we have necessarily come by ourselves, but we're reflecting the fact it's out there and it's being talked about. And often you will put a little bit on the end giving your sort of thoughts on it, won't you? You know, kind of realistic sort of thing.
We follow those up as well. That's the other thing to stress, that we're not just taking them, slapping them down, and that's we then, you know, they come to light through elsewhere.
Yeah,
then it's something we look into with the contacts that we have, contacts we can try and have, and reach out to people. That's
like it's like a police lead, isn't it? Someone gives you a lead. We try and be proactive in getting that first ourselves. If we don't, and it comes to light elsewhere, and agents and whatnot tend to go through their various contacts at Nationals and Sky and all the rest of it, we take that as a lead and immediately spring into action making phone calls. The Waghorn one wasn't our story. That was from our friends over at Those Were the Days. And immediately we start making some phone calls. And yes, on this occasion, you know, we've got a piece of putting in the paper tomorrow and online soon that yes, we can stand that up. There is interest in Waghorn. And then what we try and do is add a little bit more information on top of that. So the Webster one, it broke elsewhere, but we were able to confirm the fee was $3.5 million, as opposed to various other figures that were knocking about that day, ranging from $2 million in the morning to $5 million in the afternoon. So likewise with Waghorn, yes, there is interest, but we can also add a little bit more information now that Evans, we believe, is prepared to turn down some pretty hefty offers for it.
It's easier than ever now as well, isn't it, to start a rumour? I mean, you see so many rumours on Twitter. They just get one retweet. Some 14-year-old kid in the bedroom starts a Twitter account and manages to get something retweeted. Then it kind of snowballs from there.
And so they're not ones that we're gonna. You're not gonna see them.
No, I'm saying. But in terms of your job, it's harder than ever because rumours are so much easier to.
There's so many of them. There's like Championship rumours, EFL rumours, and people just do it for a laugh. There was it a couple of years ago? The Forest, was it called the Forest Echo News?
That's right. Yeah,
someone had started which. Set up hundreds of fake journalist profiles and just tweeted nonsense, which I'm sure places would have lazily gone with up and down the country.
It's easy to get caught out, isn't it? I mean, you see something pops up, you see someone's retweeted it, and then you immediately, like, your first thought is, what? And then you see you have to consider the source and all that sort of stuff, don't you? So
people have got this assumption that that Twitter and the internet makes our jobs easier than ever. It's
not so.
Completely the opposite of that. You know, we're. I know people look back to rose-tinted spectacles at the great people that our predecessors in terms of and journalism in general about how they used to get their news and the local paper being a trusted source. It's a different ball game, and those guys would will admit that they travelled on the coach. They had instant access to managers, players and all the rest of it. So and you know, there wasn't the same level of competition as well. Like now the club want to produce all their own content. Fanzines and other websites have got more access than ever before. There's press officers that we have to get through, a lot more middlemen, so we don't have the same access to people. Listen, we hate picking up other people's stuff. We pride ourselves on having our own contacts and building trust, but it's not quite as easy as that.
I'll tell you what, as well, the national newspapers wouldn't have bothered with Ipswich Town 6 or 7 years ago, but they do now because they can do it online.
Yeah.
It's the this kind of thing isn't making it into national newspapers, apart from in, you know, the tittle-tattle columns and have a line here and there. They're not making stories out of these in their newspapers in their own right, but the internet is great for them.
Mm. Superb. Hopefully a little bit of insight for you there. And moving on, a bit more insight, because obviously Town players...
Just to rewind on that, sorry. I think the bottom line is we are trying to do the old school journalism, and you would not believe the amount of time Andy and I spent on our phone and the people that we spoke to during the whole managerial search. I think we can probably say it now that the thing's gone on, but between Andy and I, the amount of people within the game that we spoke to directly or indirectly, but you know, people like McLaren and Coleman and Pardew and Cowley and Jones, and you know, we spoke to all those guys. So when you see stuff, I think there's this assumption that, you know, there's guesswork by the media or it's lazy journalism and we just come in and go, what should we make up today? You know, it really doesn't work like that.
If only it did.
Yeah.
We get super whippets.
Like a line in a story that says we it's understood that XXX isn't interested in it. That isn't just in there. That's the product of days of work.
Yeah.
Probably 10 words sometimes.
Absolutely.
Anyway, moving on. Another thing we can explain. Training camp. Town have flown out this morning on what was it, EasyJet?
Jet 2, it was actually.
Jet 2?
Yeah.
So, seriously, cutting costs there, that's Hurst all over. Players kind of just finding their battling members of the public, Stu.
Hurst, Evans, it'd be Evans' wallet.
Yeah, yeah. So, leaving the players there.
I think they're dispersed throughout the plane as
they
well,
were,
judging
they?
From social media.
Fighting the plebs.
Yeah.
To get onto a plane.
So if you may well have been sitting next to Martin Waghorn on your flight to southern Spain.
And if you were, please let us know. But anyway, normally this time of year, the boys disappear off to Ireland, and you go off with them. Or indeed, I think you went to Germany and you once. Was it Germany or?
We did Dusseldorf 1 year, which was good fun. I've never quite understood why the club haven't done that again, because there's that great link up between the Dusseldorf fans and Ipswich, and they come over for a few games, and that was a great trip. It was off the back of the playoffs, and the fans all went out afterwards, and that was good fun. But
so let's just explain that the elephant in the room. Basically, we're in there because we've not been invited.
Basically, yeah. And I think there's a few factors that have gone into that. It's a last-minute change for starters. They've had to cancel Ireland and set up Spain late in the day. Hurst has had to persuade Evans to open his wallet on that one because he wants to do things his way and get off to a new start. So I get that. Why aren't we there? I think he probably wants to just use this as a chance to meet his own staff and players and stuff first. And understandably, media's not top of the agenda. So the club are sending out someone from their media department and they'll produce a bit of content, so we'll have to bide
it.
Our time. Yeah,
yeah. It's a real shame though, isn't it? I mean, even though they're not going to play a game, I don't think.
There'll be something behind closed doors.
There wasn't necessarily a game planned, it would have been nice just to be out there and gauging the temperature, you know, that sort of thing, wouldn't it?
Yes, yeah. In an ideal world, we'd go out there and start building a few relations and contacts with the new guys and let them know how we work and how they want to work. I've got off on some bad footings with managers in the past. We're talking about pre-season. Paul Jewell was a prime example. I don't know if he'd been told that we had some kind of agenda or this is how we were going to do it, but the first time I went out to Holland, I'd booked into the same hotel as the team, and the club told me basically, we don't want you there, make sure you rebook. So we rebooked into another hotel, turned up at the training camp to do a pre-organised interview with Paul Jewell, wandered over to the side of the training pitch to wait for the end of training, and the press officer scurried out to the middle of the centre circle, whispered away with Paul Jewell, came back, and I was basically frog-marched back into the hotel in case I saw any state secrets from the last 5 minutes of training.
Revolutionary new formation.
You know, Jewell's tone was immediately like, I'm not going to take any nonsense from you guys, and that wasn't a great footing to get off on, to be honest. You know, I didn't feel like, you know, I already felt like judgments had been made on us before we'd even had a chance to sort of work together. So hopefully this new era, and from speaking to Paul Hurst, you know, I think this is forget what's gone on before and all the rest of it, this is a chance for everybody to start again, and hopefully we can all get off on a good footing.
Of course, we did see last week the boys did return to training last Monday, wasn't it? Or anyway, yeah, last Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we? Yeah, a couple of new looks as well. Chambers and Joey Garner, shaven headed. A few suggestions it may be to have kind of warned off Deputy Doig. Did you see that picture of Doig chewing the whistle as he watched practice? Looked like he was just ready to kill at a moment's notice if Hurst just let him. Which got me thinking, what do we think about those shaven heads? Suit the boys? I reckon Garner, definitely.
I wonder if Joe Garner's is due to his fractured skull.
I did think that, yeah. But it suits him, doesn't it?
Yeah, it suits him.
I'm not sure about Chambers. It also got me thinking, best town haircuts ever.
Well, I'm buzzing because if shaven heads are the new...
You're in.
The new beards and tattoos, then I'm suddenly I'm
do
in fashion again.
Absolutely.
Not that I have much choice about mine, but yeah, happy days.
So we've got those two. We've got Big Trev as well with his fantastic... I don't know if you've seen... I assume you've seen the pictures, but essentially, just if you haven't, he's got dreadlocks, the lad. But he's got one half kind of natural and one half gold.
I like it.
Which is fantastic.
Barry Cotter's got braids as well.
Yeah, we didn't actually see a picture of Barry, did we? Yeah,
he's gone for the Jason Lee type vibe, isn't
he? Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. But
no.
I'm not a guy to pass comment on braids and hair, I don't think. No. It's not really my... Wouldn't work for me, but yeah.
What are we saying though? I'm saying town, best haircuts ever. I'm going J. Emmanuel Thomas. Do you remember that?
Did he have some sort of funky lines and stuff?
Do you remember? He basically had an entirely bald head, apart from a little strip.
Oh, yeah.
I believe fans of the Intimate Grooming would call it like a landing strip.
I'm going Ivan Campo. To see a perm
yeah.
bobbing about at Portman Road with that barrel chest of it, that was just...
I saw beautiful. You tweeted that and he actually liked it.
Yeah, he liked it. He liked the tweet. Yeah.
Stewie, what are you saying?
Well... I guess Jimmy Bullard because of the amount of wigs they sold in the club shop off the
basis. Forget the Bullard mania there was.
Anyone who can sell wigs in a club shop, it's got to be a good thing.
So
maybe
they
could sell some Shalabar wigs.
Oh, they should.
Is there anyone else you could do a wig in the Ipswich squad? There's not really, is there? It would have to be a Shalabar only deal.
On that note, Shalabar's hair, Hollywood Hurst teeth, and Chris Doig are my three favourite things about Ipswich Town right now.
Just Chris Doig.
Chris Doig, full stop. Yeah, I love that picture of him chewing that whistle.
He's got his name nailed, which is good.
Doig, yeah.
Doig.
So, watch this space. I'll decide at some point what my favourite thing is about town, but it's one of those three at the moment.
Okay.
Moving on, World Cup, boys. Little tournament going out on in Russia. And I've got to say, for me, it's the best one I can remember... maybe ever.
Agreed.
I'm enjoying it incredibly, and obviously there's been a lot of upsets. Germany going out, that was a shame, wasn't it, to watch that. Stewie, we saw that. South Korea knocking the Germans out in the office here. There were a few smiles going on, and it looks like it's opened up for England. We don't get too carried away, but I think England are definitely going to win the World Cup.
I don't.
Boo.
Me and Stu were talking.
Yeah.
We both think they're going to lose to Colombia.
That would be a very England thing to do.
It would, and there'll be like an apocalyptic style fallout greater than we've ever seen before, because having gone into the tournament
with no
convinced ourselves we've got zero expectations and this is the worst team we've ever had, it's suddenly flipped off the basis of a couple of wins against Tunisia and Panama and some upsets elsewhere. We've all decided it's coming home and it's great. Like, I've seen a lot of people saying everyone should calm down with the excitement. No, let's all get carried away. That's the joy of it, isn't it? And it may all come crashing down tomorrow. But for now, let's everyone look at our wall charts and get carried away. And
it's nice, though, isn't it? Because the summer is long and hot.
I don't like the summer.
What?
I spent my entire week off just moaning about the heat. I just don't do well in it.
But anyway, it's nice when England are in the World Cup. And
it's nice when
England
are in the World Cup.
Just going back to that Panama result, somewhere I saw some wit on Twitter describe beating Panama at football as the equivalent of beating Stevie Wonder of darts, which I thought was quite apt. Anyway, obviously, aside from England, which are all our team, clearly, we also picked a team before the start of the tournament each, and there's only one of us left standing.
And I don't know who they're playing in the next round because I've forgotten.
You don't know who Japan are playing? They got through, they topped the group.
I know they topped the group.
But in Belgium, aren't they?
Are they?
That's right, of course.
Because we would have played.
Yeah, we would have played, yeah.
Call yourself a fan?
Yeah, I don't know if I do. I feel like I've let the boys down. I didn't watch their game against Senegal.
Rubbish.
I know, I just feel like I've let them down.
That was a cracking game, Japan.
They're doing alright without me, though.
It was really good.
I'm fully on board now, though. They're going to beat the Belgians.
And still, it was such a shame to see your boys
really down. Pleased with my pick, Senegal. We picked our teams, didn't we?
The Lions of Taranga.
Yeah, did you see the little video of them of their doing their joyous training session, doing some sort of African dancing on the training pitch beforehand. Loved all that. Loved that, everything about Senegal.
Saying that to DuckTales was the win of the World Cup so far.
Absolutely.
Surely everyone listening to this has seen it, but if you haven't, go on Twitter and find it, because it is that's probably the best thing about the World Cup so far.
Remember DuckTales?
You've not seen
it? Yeah, I remember DuckTales. I haven't seen this.
It works so well, doesn't it?
Show me after.
It works so well. And of course,
if Scrooge McDuck had actually dived into that vault of coins,
like he did,
would die, wouldn't he?
He'd be horrifically disfigured at the very least, because you jump in from a good height face first into a pile of metal.
Yeah,
that's not going to end well for anyone, is
definitely
it?
Definitely not.
Sort of thing that maybe Chris Doig does to toughen himself up.
A great show though.
I reckon he's a big softy, really, Chris Doig.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Maybe Hearst is the attack dog. Maybe Doig's just kind of just
the attack dog.
And obviously my team, Nigeria, exited cruelly at the hands of Argentina.
They still won the World Cup though. They won the World Cup.
But do you know what? They only wore that kit once, that fire kit, when they beat Iceland. The other two times they wore the away kit, the very dull green away kit, and both games they lost. So only got themselves to blame, really. Anyway, moving on. A new weekly feature inspired by Andy and mine's love of all things American and Stu's hatred for it, just to wind him up. We're going to do something every week called Hot Takes. Andy, explain a hot take.
Hot take is something that is so hot that it's not on your mind until you're asked for it. It's your take on something. It's so hot that you don't even understand why you think it.
It just comes out.
It just comes out. It's what you think. It's in the moment. You don't care about the consequences. You don't even believe it half the time, but it's so hot.
Okay.
Give us a hot take, Andy. What's your hot take?
Luke Chambers' haircut, newly shaven haircut, won't last beyond the end of September.
I can see that.
He'll ditch it. I think he's already getting negative feedback from female fans, certainly some that I know.
Is he really?
Big shout out Rosie, my friend Rosie, big Luke Chambers fan. She's already ditched him.
No way.
Because of the haircut. And that matters. And I think
it doesn't suit him, to be fair.
No, it doesn't. I don't know what. Does he suffer in the heat as well, like me? Is it an attempt just to get cool over the summer?
Could be.
I think he'll be back luscious, well groomed. Looking good, probably by the Norwich game, actually, September the 2nd.
Hot take, Ipswich will be Norwich at Portman Road.
Ah, that was my hot take, Stu. You've taken it away from me.
So hot, though. So hot that it's bubbling up inside both of you.
Yeah. I almost guarantee that Town are going to beat Norwich in that first game at Portman Road.
What are you prepared to sort of put down on the,
what
on
should
the
I?
Table? Yeah.
What are you talking about? Money or...
Well, if you want, we can talk cash.
Get a Chris Doig tattoo.
Yeah, there we go.
That's hot.
No, that's not.
Ipswich, do not beat Norwich. Mark Heath, get a Chris Doig tattoo.
For the record, I've not signed anything. That's by no means
his face tattooed onto your face.
Not sure about that. But I do think that Town are going to beat Norwich on that first derby game of the season. I don't know why. I think, to be fair, I have predicted that first couple of seasons. But there's just something about the momentum of the two clubs. And obviously, we don't even know who's going to be playing for Town yet. But what are you saying, Stu? You obviously feel the same way.
Yeah, I do. I don't know why. We started talking about the fixture and I just do. That's the feeling that I've got right at this moment in time.
What are you going to have tattooed on you?
It doesn't have to be a tattoo.
I feel like I should get a tattoo because 90% of the population have got crap tattoos now.
Yeah.
So I never really understood the fallout around the Sterling tattoo. Everyone getting a bit het up about
a man
getting a crap tattoo. Is that,
that
not...
Was... absolutely ridiculous.
Seeing everyone walking about in the sunshine at the moment, it seems like most of the population have them these days. I don't know, what shall I get?
The winning goals, the winning goal scorer's name and number on your back.
Yeah. Oh, far in the park.
If it's an own goal, you have to do it as well.
Okay.
So you
I
could
can't
have
guarantee
like,
that I'll do that.
You could have a Norwich name.
You can draw it on me in permanent marker. There we go.
All right.
If Ipswich beat Norwich in permanent marker.
If they beat them or if they don't?
So it would be if they don't.
Yeah.
So it would be
the Norwich player.
Yeah, it would be the Norwich player. Put his name and number on your back.
Yeah.
Can we do that, please?
Yeah, all right. I've said it now.
It could be Buendina, that geezer they've just signed.
Get a black marker out and you can yeah.
Okay, well that's going to be...
I am supremely confident that Town are going to win that game.
That escalated real quick.
This is hot takes.
Absolutely.
This is what happens.
This is the way it works. And feel free to give us your own hot takes via Twitter, and if we like them, we'll retweet them. I think that's fair.
Let us know if we can draw on your back.
Absolutely,
hot take, Jonas Knudsen's throw-ins will become a new weapon for Ipswich again.
Stu's on fire now. Look at this.
So you can have... You're still doing the Norwich thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I thought we'd gone just no, gloss
no.
over that.
No, you're still having it done, but no, it's a good take.
She likes hot takes so much, she's just come up with two.
She's been hot all morning, actually.
He has been hot.
A little trip to Starbucks earlier.
I think he may explode. Yeah. Moving on from hot takes. Mailbag. Thanks for all your input on Twitter. We had a lot of questions. I've picked a few of them out just to talk about quickly. So I'll fire through them, boys. You give your thoughts. Harry Butcher, where will we finish next season? And will Waghorn / Garner go? We've already talked about Waghorn Garner. So where Town going to finish next
14th.
Season?
14th. But that will be a positive 14th. That will be 14th with people at the end of it looking forward to next season. Yeah, a backward step in terms of position, but a forward step in terms of entertainment and things are moving forward. 14th.
Excellent. You should work in PR. Stewie?
10th.
You really have to force that out.
I don't know. I just panicked. I don't know what. I genuinely don't have a clue where they're going to finish this next year, and that's why it's so exciting.
I'm saying 8th. I think we're going to be flirting with the playoffs most of the season. I've just got a feeling. Hopefully.
We.
I say we. You know what I mean? The royal we.
I like it.
Boy from Derby officially, so I'm Derby County by birth, but having lived in Suffolk for 25 years, Ipswich Town, special place in my heart. My first shirt was an Ipswich Town shirt. One of my granddad's best mates was John Duncan, so I've got a
got a
clear line to Ipswich Town as well. The buffet bowler, which I love. I expected Hurst to make minor changes to the squad this summer, but early indications suggest something more fundamental. Is that a fair conclusion? Exciting times. Is Hurst going to come in and blow up the squad?
No, I don't think he's going to blow up the squad. I think there might be one more ever so slightly surprising departure, and that I don't know who that will be. It might be Waghorn, who knows.
But I
don't know if Bart's an interesting one, because it's a different situation, isn't it, with contracts and stuff. That will be a different conversation if an offer comes in, because you'd need to be, if you're going to turn down big money for Bart, you need to be sure
that he's going to sign. Some of it's outside of his control, isn't it? Bart and Knudsen both now go into the proper final 12 months with no extension clauses or anything, so they're in a slightly vulnerable situation. Bart and Jonas both coming back fresh from World Cups as well, so it's a little bit of a different situation if you get some testy bids for them now. But in terms of moving players on through choice, I don't think there's going to be anything too much more dramatic. We've discussed Garner potentially for reasons discussed, but I can't see anything else too dramatic.
I think the Webster move, potentially, we're talking about him getting the money from that to spend, that gives him the wiggle room that maybe he needs to fill in those gaps in the imbalanced squad that he's already invested, already spoken of. Look, we know Marcus Evans' initial investments in the squad year on year aren't going to change. He said that already.
Hmm.
But Webster gives him some wiggle room to mould things in his image. If that's all he's doing, moulding and bringing in a few to fill in areas, I don't see that he needs to sell any more of the crown jewels.
Tom Lawrence. I assume not the Tom Lawrence. Maybe it is. How can we protect the club from losing young players to clubs like Man City? Obviously, we've not actually touched on this. Mm-hmm. Ben Knight, 16-year-old, very, very highly thought of, hotly touted, left the club to sign for Man City for £1 million. And Tom says, how can we prevent that from happening, and does academy status help?
Yes, is the answer to that. So, on the bottom of that story earlier this week, I revisited some old quotes from Steve McGavin, who was formerly Ipswich's head of academy recruitment. He's since moved on to Norwich City, and in those quotes he basically said it doesn't matter whether you're Cat 1, 2, 3, 4, clubs will always poach each other's. And I think at that time, a couple of years ago, there was a lot of players moving from Cat 1 to Cat 1 academies. Your Liverpool's poaching from Man United's and Arsenal's and vice versa, and that ultimately just came down to money, because you're not moving for football reasons there. From what I understand, having spoken to a few more people this week, is that they've tightened up on that now, and it's they've clamped down on Category 1 to Category 1 transfers. So if Ipswich were Category 1, then they would have been in a far better position to stop your Ben Knight going to Man City. Charlie Brown went to Chelsea a couple of years ago. The young Canadian lad Flores looks like he might be going to Arsenal. So I think Marcus Evans will look back with a huge amount of regret that they didn't push harder for Category 1 in the early days, because the bar was set a lot lower when they first brought in ECPP. They didn't chuck serious money at it in the early days because they didn't quite know what, you know, what the criteria would be to get in. They missed out by a ridiculous margin on one of the audits, 0.3% or something like that. And it's like they've missed the boat now because the bar's getting higher and higher. It's a very elitist program. They've got the big boys in. And I think they're almost making it kind of a closed shop to the others now. So it's going to be very hard for Ipswich to keep hold of talent like that, which, let's be honest, makes a little bit of a mockery of Marcus Evans putting the academy at the heart of Ipswich's, the way Ipswich are going to get beat the odds and progress and get out of this kind of Groundhog Day cycle. Evans is saying we're going to produce from within. Well, it's going to be very difficult to do that if all your best talent is going to get poached at a young age.
You look at teams like Brentford and Huddersfield, they've both closed their academies, haven't they, for this reason.
Have they?
Essentially, because they see a model of going out and picking up players like Grant Ward, who's come through the Tottenham Academy, isn't going to make the Tottenham first team. They see their best way of doing that is bringing in those players rather than running the risk of doing all the legwork, taking a lad all the way through to their first professional contract and then being powerless to keep them. It's tough out there, and clubs are making big decisions based on this stuff, and no suggestion Ipswich are going to do that, by the way.
And they won't, and Ipswich believe firmly that their model can still work and that category 1, 2 blah 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 is just a number, and they've got some brilliant coaches up at Ipswich's academy. It's producing again with Brian Clough back. The worst thing they ever did was let Brian Clough go during the Keane era, but they've got him back. They've got some top class coaches up there, and they are producing again, and they have kept hold of Nydam and Downs and Dizel's a slightly different one. If Andre's father wasn't Jason, I think he'd have been long gone. But Jason, being a former player of the club in the town, has the club in his heart, has persuaded Andre that it's best to stay and have a pathway into first team football, and hopefully they can persuade players that look at these players that go to big clubs, they get lost in the system. What are your chances of getting into Manchester City or Chelsea's team? You know, the history and statistics tell you it's very, very slim. But, you know, that's no slight on these young players for making the move, because not only is it life-changing amounts of money, but you've got to back your ability, and to go to the Premier League champions and to be trained up there, I can fully understand why they've taken the move. But it is pretty galling from an Ipswich perspective.
Hot take, Ben Knight will never play for Man City and we'll never hear from him again.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about Ben Knight is that I've never seen coaches' eyes light up the way they do when people talk about Ben Knight. I know Kieran Dyer said that he thinks he can go on to be a better player than Dyer was. I know he had his injuries, but crikey, Kieran Dyer played 33 times for England. Brian Clough says he's potentially the best young kid he's ever worked with. Think of the players that Brian Clough's brought through.
And Brian's not the kind of guy that's just going to say that as a soundbite.
A throwaway comment.
He's a very thoughtful man.
Absolutely. And City, and I've spoke to a few people about Ben Knight this week, Man City rate him almost as highly as Foden. And that tells you everything you need to know. So
you don't have to smug myself off.
I can fully understand where you're coming from, and that may turn out to be the case. But time will tell whether it's £1 million could end up looking very, very cheap for him if he goes on to fulfil his potential. But it is potential, and how many times have we seen 16-year-olds completely fail?
City take an interesting path with these players, don't they? With Foden, a lot of clubs would have loaned Phil Foden out last season. They kept him very, very close. They wanted him. They didn't want him playing. I think he nearly went to Sheffield United, didn't he? There was talk of that, but they wanted him training with their first team players, learning that way rather than going out into the Championship. So that, I don't know. Will we see Ben Knight out on loan in playing games? If they rate him that highly, probably not.
Guardiola seems to want to keep them in house and learn his way of playing through the City Academy, doesn't he? So interesting. Charlie Brown's doing quite well at Chelsea as well. Had a little look. He played a few 23 games for them last year and is doing quite well there. So I think, as disappointing as it is for Ipswich Town fans, I think ultimately we wish these lads well, and we don't
absolutely
wish ill on them at all.
Time will tell. Obviously, when Knight is the captain of Man City and he's won numerous titles with Man City and he's playing for England, he can come and punch me right in the face.
He'll be fueled by that.
Absolutely.
He'll be fueled by your
that
hot
snub
take.
It's like Michael Jordan was snubbed when he was a kid, and that fueled his entire career. Barney Booth, is Chalobah going to play centre back or DM? We kind of already discussed that. This is the interesting one. Are there any players you feel could find a new position under Hurst? I remember talk of Bishop moving out wide.
No. Well,
no?
Not No to Bishop playing out wide. I want to see him in the middle.
He's not got the pace, has he, to play out wide?
He's quicker than you think, actually. He when he gets his legs open and runs, he's pretty rapid, but I'd play him in the middle.
How about Freddie Sears finds a new position playing
in his
up
actual
front.
Position?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, it might be some players, when we talk about actual position, players actually turning to their real positions, which Sears would be a prime candidate for that, wouldn't he?
Mm. I'll tell you one. I don't know, I just might not be thinking this at all. Barry Cotter, play him on the wing.
Yeah?
He's
fast, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's skillful, he's fast, he can pass the ball, he can move, he can see gap. This is all based on 60 minutes of watching him play against Barnsley, by the way.
Yeah.
But, look, that 60 minutes, I think he could play on the wing.
He
needs to work on the defensive side of things, by all accounts. Why not play him on the wing?
There you go then, Barney. Thanks for the question.
Hot take, Paul Hurst will love Jonas Knudsen because Hurst loves ultra-fit players. We know, I've been told, apparently, the Ipswich players have said this is the most gruelling week of training they've ever had, is what's been fed back to me. He wants them to run and run and run, and I tell you, Jonas Knudsen must be up there in terms of fitness. He's a, you know, I spoke to him about life growing up in Scandinavia, that's in Denmark, that is what he prides himself on. He used to cycle miles to and from school and training every day. One thing that if you ask Jonas Knudsen, he says, I'll keep running, and I think Hurst is going
to
like that.
Still cycling as well. I see him now and again. I think he cycles reasonably close to my house on the way to training.
Is he?
Yeah. And of course, he launched these green bikes that
he
are
did,
in Ipswich,
yeah.
which
you're a fan of.
I am, but they've been ditched.
Have they?
They've been, well, not ditched. They've been sort of retired for the summer due to a technological advance. I don't. It is a hot take. They won't be back.
Hot take. Also, Stuart Watson loves hot takes.
It's your new thing.
I think we need to restrict the hot takes
I think
to
it
the
should
hot
just
take
be one.
Section.
Absolutely.
This is getting out of hand.
It is. We need to have some semblance of order. Stewie. Chris Mitchell. Be good to discuss the history of Evans claiming to spend fees such as Wickham, Mings, Cresswell and Murphy, circa 30 million with add-ons, compared to what he's actually spent and whether he'll actually reinvest his summer's money in the playing squad and not, famously, painting turnstiles.
Well, he hasn't reinvested it in transfer fees. That's the thing that's clear. That money hasn't been sent. Obviously, some fees have been spent, but it's been swallowed up by wages and sign-ons, hasn't it? Like, I've got this is purely the Connor Wickham deal, who went in 2011 for initial 8 million to 12, I think it was.
Mm.
That summer, recruited were Chopra, Ellington, Cresswell, Bowyer, Jett and Bullard. That's quite a wage bill.
Mm.
And that's swallowed up. That's going to have swallowed up a lot of that money. And you've got to remember that Wickham fee won't have been paid. He's not getting £8 million cash in his bank account the day after the deal's done. Comes in instalments.
I know people are getting pretty cynical of hearing the club say it will be reinvested in the playing squad, and that's very carefully worded, that part. But it has, and the accounts show that as fact, that the wage bill has gone up year after year after year, because that's the market and it continues to rise. And even with Murphy going on, I think the deals that they did that coincide with Tom Lawrence? But I know they paid hefty loan fee. You know, the loan fees are
they're expensive
now.
They are expensive, these loans.
And the wages and all the rest of it. So it does go back into the playing squad, but it just kind of gets swallowed up in terms of other areas. I get the feeling Hurst would rather spend £500,000 on a transfer fee and on smaller wages and have a hungry player wanting to prove themselves, rather than going out and getting an experienced free transfer who demands a quite a big wage. So it's the way it's going to be spent, I think, will be interesting.
Mm. For me, I just feel like Town need to make a signing of name / excitement value, whether that involves big money, unlikely obviously, but obviously having got rid of Webster,
you can do that in different ways, can't you?
Yeah, so I'd like to see that happen. We'll see if that does happen.
They're not going to be multi-million-pound transfers.
No,
I think that's pretty clear.
But I'm saying they need something.
The odd
£500,000
galvanise pound signing here or there.
Yeah.
You know, that can, you know,
and that's
a little bit.
That's in the 5-point plan, isn't it? Spend Grant Ward kind of embodies the 5-point plan.
Mm.
There's a bit of pressure on Grant there, but that's the kind of signing that embodies the signing section of that plan.
And Webster as well. 700,000, develop him, make a profit, reinvest the money. But you're right, you know, sign players for that sort of bracket of money and then raise their value. That's the name of the game.
We shall see. Gents, just looking at the time there, we're well over an hour now, which is getting out there. I mean, obviously I said there was a lot to talk about, but we have done a lot of talking, so yeah, we should probably
beards.
Wrap up
the... We've done beards, we've done catchphrase.
Hot take. We should finish this.
Interesting. We will draw the football chat to a close. Boys, any other business? What are you up to this week?
Working.
Yes. Anything else? What are you doing the weekend?
That is the last weekend before the football comes back, so I will no doubt be made to do stuff around the house.
You won't be watching England in a quarter final. You've already said that.
No.
Because they're going out tomorrow night.
Is that the weekend? Is it?
Saturday, 3 o'clock.
Yeah, so I won't be doing that. I'll be watching Colombia against Switzerland.
Stewie Watson?
Just thinking about football, mate.
Yeah,
all the time.
That's all you do.
Yeah.
Me, I'll be watching UFC 226. That's the real appeal of this weekend. My first love, fight sports. And it's a massive card this weekend. Super fight at the top. Stipe Miocic against Daniel Cormier. Light heavyweight champ against heavyweight champion. I'm so excited about it. I'm buzzing.
Are UFC guys, are they still eating horse meat as a main...
No, that was kind of a... You're talking about Alistair Overeem.
I am talking about Alistair Overeem. I've forgotten his name.
For those of you who haven't seen any kind of MMA or K1 action, Alistair Overeem was famously massive, built like the proverbial brick house. And his explanation for that, rather than taking tremendous amounts of drugs, was he was eating horse meat. Funnily enough, when he went into the UFC and started getting drug tested, USADA, etc., his physique has somewhat diminished. So I'm assuming he's stopped eating horse meat.
I think the horse must have taken the
maybe that's it.
Performance enhancing.
Maybe that's it. But anyway, I'll be watching that. Or we're trying to anyway, because the mother-in-law's with us this weekend, so bad times.
Is that like a 3 a.m. job?
I won't watch it live. I'm too old for that, Andy. That'd ruin me for a week. I can't do that anymore. But yeah, I'll be looking forward to that this weekend. Thank you, as ever, for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed this extra long special on Ipswich Town stuff. We'll be back next week. Stewie Watson is off on holiday, but we'll get someone else involved. Probably Mickey Bacon, I'd imagine.
Oh,
I know. But as I say, if you have enjoyed it, I hope you have. Please subscribe via your podcast provider. Leave us a review on iTunes, a 5-star review, and write some words on there. That'd be great. Tell us how superb Stewie Watson is. And we'll speak to you again next week.